the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today we're talking about something that is a genuine sign of the future that ought to be of alarm to all of us, in particular the nation of Japan. You're looking at plummeting birth rates there over 27 years. Over a period of time, that builds up to an eventual loss of population. For the last 3 years, Japan has had a net loss in population. So what does all that mean for us? It means that we're looking at a worldview shift worldwide, having to do with the way we look at children, babies, reproduction. We're looking at the fact that in Japan right now, in a trend that cannot be quickly reversed, they're looking within this generation of losing 70% of the nation's workforce. 70%. 7 out of 10 people working today will not be replaced in Japan. The net result of this economically is absolute zero economic activity. That's unsustainable for a civilization. You're looking at a civilization that is basically deciding to starve itself of a future. You can look at Japan, where this is now so acute. The Washington Post wrote an article about this. Very, very interesting. In fact, one of the most interesting aspects of this story coming in the secular press was that you had the secular media saying it is almost impossible to overstate the consequences of this crisis. When we look at that, you could say, well, that's Japan. But realize that Western Europe is very close behind. Russia, in particular, is facing a future very much like Japan. And in the United States, were it not for the reality of immigration, we would be facing the same picture here. We'll be talking about why that is so, what it has to do with worldview implications, and why there is such a trend around the world to have fewer babies. While people were talking about a population explosion, certainly in the 70s and the 80s, and while some are even talking about it now as one of the causes of global warming, one of the realities we have to face is that the real social disaster looming before us is that we have turned ourselves into a society that is simply not reproducing. And it's by will. We're not talking about plague, famine, or war, the kinds of things that have generally impacted population patterns. We're talking about the simple decision, by will, not to have children. We'll turn to that in just a moment. To join the conversation, give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, a review of some issues in the news. It was 60 years ago today, according to the Jewish calendar, that the State of Israel declared its independence. One of the biggest historical moments of the 20th century, now 60 years behind us. You're going to hear now an excerpt of the man who became the president of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, reading Israel's Declaration of Independence in the newly revived language of spoken Hebrew.
Be'eretz Yisrael kam ha'am ha'yehudi, ba utzva dmuto haruchnit hadatit v'hamdinit.
That was David Ben-Gurion, later the president of Israel, declaring the nation's independence. It's hard for us, those of us now living in the year 2008, to remember the historical context into which Israel was born. The background to Israel was not a new movement of Zionism. It had been a very long movement. It's hard for most of us now alive to remember that there was a hope for a Jewish homeland that was not always associated with the land we now know as Israel. There were those who talked about a Jewish homeland in Brazil, in South America, in Africa, in Madagascar. But eventually, largely because of the horrors of World War II and the Holocaust, and especially political dynamics that had involved this area of the world, even in the two world wars, there was the opportunity for the Jews to migrate to the land that they had once known as the Land of Promise, to reclaim that land, and to establish what is even now the only major and stable democratic state in that entire region of the world, 60 years ago today. Now, it was by our calendar on the 15th of May that President Harry Truman in 1948 recognized the State of Israel. And so that recognition from the American side will be next week. But it's very important for us to understand the importance for the people of Israel today to celebrate the 60th anniversary of their country. One of the things we must remember in this light is that Israel is a providential nation. Now, God's providence rules over all things at all times, but his providence is particularly visible in certain events in world history. It is hard to imagine how you could have the emergence of the Israeli state, the Jewish state in Israel, without some kind of divine provision for its birth, and it's very hard to imagine how it would have survived. Remember, in 1948, Israel emerged out of a war. Its Arab neighbors determined to bring about its extinction. Even now, it is surrounded by hostile states, or states with at least partially hostile populations. And so the tenacity of the state of Israel has become one of the most interesting political phenomena of the 20th and now the 21st centuries. So let's wish a happy birthday to the state of Israel 60 years after it declared its declaration of independence and after it became a state. Remember, in the light of all the controversy over Israel, in light of all the debate you hear in the media, remember that the state of Israel was created by direct action of the United Nations. It was not merely that it declared itself a state, but it was recognized so by the United Nations as an historical consequence of World War II. Looking at other issues in the news, there is a lot out there going on about young people. In particular, a story that is coming out from the United States and the United Kingdom indicating that American and British children are taking a lot of antipsychotic drugs. And when we talk about a lot, we're talking about a genuinely huge number. But if you're looking at the differences between America and Britain, you'll look at the fact that American children are taking these drugs at about six times the rate of children who are taking them in the United Kingdom, and children in the United Kingdom more than those in other European countries. So especially when you think about this from an American perspective, it is a reminder that we are turning our children into pharmaceutical users. And not just when you're talking about antibiotics and all those other kinds of drugs and vaccines, but now antipsychotic drugs. The Associated Press reports that experts now looking at the question as to whether U.S. kids are being overtreated say it's beside the point. In terms of long-term safety, experts are saying they simply do not know. But experts believe that it is likely the drugs are being overprescribed for both American and British children. Two of the causes for these prescriptions are autism and hyperactivity. And you start looking at the diagnosis of these phenomena, and we've talked about it on this program again and again and again. At least in part, I have to believe that a large part of this diagnosis is that you have boys being diagnosed as being boys. The vast majority of the children on these drugs are indeed male children. And it seems to me that at least in large part, they're missing at least the fact that a lot of this behavior is normal for an awful lot of boys. But the easy way out, and I'm not suggesting that everyone who uses these drugs is looking for the easy way out, but I'm afraid as a society, and in many cases, this is just the easy way out. We don't have to deal with the child as a child. Give them a drug. You may remember controversy in Great Britain just a few weeks ago when the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, suggested that perhaps in Britain there should be two different systems of law. He said he was speaking hypothetically. It got himself in so much trouble that there were open calls for his resignation from office. He was suggesting that perhaps alongside British civil and criminal law, there should be an allowance for Islamic Sharia law and Sharia courts in Great Britain. Now, that's a clear and present issue if you are British, because there are entire regions of London and of other major British cities that are really dominated by a Muslim culture. And there are Muslims who are insisting on the right to, for instance, perform divorces by Sharia law. Well, the Baltimore Sun is reporting that an attempt to do this in the United States has failed. Let me read to you. The report is by Nick Madigan of the Baltimore Sun. It reads, saying, "I divorced thee three times, as men in Muslim countries have been able to do for centuries when leaving their wives." Well, it's not enough if you're a resident of Maryland. The state Supreme Court ruled yesterday. In Maryland, that court is known as the Court of Appeals. It rejected a Pakistani man's argument that his invocation of the Islamic formula under which a marriage is dissolved simply by the husband's say-so allowed him to part with his wife of more than 20 years and deny her a share of his $2 million estate. Now, as a Christian looking at this, I have to tell you this is a pretty complex situation, because there are situations in which we would recognize that respect for freedom of religion and religious expression would mean we would want to accommodate even another faith, even a faith not our own, as much as possible within the law. But what I see in this is not only the fact that you have the strain between American law and the worldview of Islam, but you have the entire issue of divorce. America has itself been moving towards a no-fault divorce culture ever since no-fault divorce was made legal in the last generation. You know, in this case, this Muslim man wanted to divorce his wife simply by saying three times, I divorce thee. And the American court said no. Let me just remind you, however, that when it comes to an actual legal divorce in Maryland, just one spouse can say just a little bit more than that and force the divorce. The rest of it's a negotiation over property, and at least to some extent, that was an issue germane to this case as well. The whole issue of divorce just reminds us of how we have subverted and sidelined marriage, and most of us doing so even without a troubled conscience. We'll be back to talk about falling birth rates in Japan and what it means for the rest of us. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. One of the most important books of the 20th century was written by the late Richard Weaver. The title of the book is really the book, and it was Ideas Have Consequences. And when we look around us at the demographic realities of our time, the social and cultural challenges of our day, we realize that ideas have consequences. And often, one of our chief responsibilities as thinking Christians is to look from the event, or a statistic, or a development, or a pattern, and work back to the idea that gave it birth. Two major demographic factors are playing into our consideration today, looking at falling birth rates in Japan, a shrinking population, and what it means. The first of these is that people are deciding to have fewer children. And it's not at all in Japan to have childless couples or to have a couple with one child. Even when you have a couple with two children, remember that it's underneath the actual reproductive replacement rate, which would have to be 2.2, just given infant mortality and all the rest. And then you start looking at the fact that you have not only that, you have another demographic reality, and that is that people are living longer. Now, right now, if you were to go to Japan, and this is what's really interesting, when you think about a picture of the future, Japan is an interesting cosmological portrait for us, and cosmopolitan portrait, because it is a society of a sizable population, but in a very narrowly defined geographic area. And that makes Japan a very interesting laboratory to look to the future. But here is the deal. In an average society, what would be the ratio, for instance, of the elderly to children? Or what percentage would be taken up by both of those in terms of the larger population? Well, right now, in the United States, children account for about 20% of the population. About 20%. In Japan, it's only 13.5%. That number has been falling for 34 straight years. So for 34 years, the percentage of the population that is made up of children has been falling, and children defined here as 14 years old or younger. Now, how many would be, what percentage would be among the elderly? Well, right now, in Japan, 22% of the population is 65 or older. That is the highest proportion in the world, and the number's on the rise. According to the Washington Post, by the year 2020, that is just 12 years out, little less, the elderly will outnumber children by 3-1. By 2040, just 32 years out, they will outnumber children by 4-1. Now, you look at that and you say, well, it's a very good thing that people are living longer, and it is. That is a very good thing. We're very thankful for that. We're thankful for improved health, and it is lengthening life expectancy, and we should consider that a stewardship as well as a gift. But when you look at the shrinking number of children, you realize that you have the scissor action of two demographic developments that are going to create an absolute crisis for the culture, because when you have so many people who are aged and so few who are young, when you're not replacing your workers, you're looking at a catastrophe in the making. For instance, in Japan, as the Washington Post says, it's difficult to overstate the consequences of this development. As the paper writes, the economic and social consequences of these trends are difficult to overstate. It refers to what's going on in Japan as a slow-motion demographic catastrophe that is without precedent in the developed world. Now, let's look at the numbers. By the middle of this century, Japan will lose 70% of its workers. Its workforce cut 7 out of 10. So you look at the people working in Japan today, 7 out of 10 will not be replaced by mid-century. That leads to a total economic impact of absolute inaction. In other words, Japan cannot register any economic activity with only 3 out of 10 workers working. Now, when you look at this, obviously something's going to happen. Either you're going to have a nation that absolutely collapses, or you're going to have massive immigration from somewhere in terms of workers who will come in and fill these gaps. But then you look at Japan, you see that's what makes it so interesting, because Japan is such an ethnically defined culture. And those people who come in are not going to be Japanese. So Japan will cease to be the Japan as the Japanese now know it, even if there's a massive influx of immigration, and you're having to talk about massive numbers to come in to provide the workers for Japan and the future. Now, you're looking at human history here telling us that this kind of demographic tragedy or great crisis has come about in times past basically for 3 definable reasons: war, plague, or famine. Yeah, 3 things over which parents really have very little control. Couples really don't have much control over the fact that war may take the husband away and he may never return. Or famine that may take any number of people away, huge infant mortality, lowered rates of reproduction, vast consequences throughout the entire population. And, of course, plague. Plague coming in, killing the young and the old, and reducing the reproductive capacity of the culture. But this is not plague or famine or war we're talking about here. And as a matter of fact, interestingly enough, Japan's population grew during World War II. As much agony as that nation went through during World War II, it had a sizable population growth because the culture prized children. In other words, couples, even during the war, believed that it was their responsibility to look to the future and to have children because it was a part of their social compact, their social obligation. The modern Japanese simply don't think that way. But again, let's move back from Japan. Let's come to the United States. The average size of the American family has been in a free fall throughout the 20th century. A lot of reasons for that. The shift from an agrarian to an industrial and a post-industrial economy has something to do with that, because you don't need to raise more children, boys to be workers in the field, girls traditionally to be workers in the house, the way that was true in agrarian eras in the United States. And so you have a fall off on this. You have the rise of cities, urbanization, suburbanization. You have the rise of the knowledge class, much higher economic expectations, much higher educational aspirations. You start looking at that and you say, all right, Americans are also deciding to have fewer children. And now you have formulas that people will use to say, if you have a child, the child's going to cost you X number of dollars on average. And so people are making economic calculations, lifestyle calculations, and all the rest. But the reality is that in the United States, we would not now be in the same situation as Japan, but we would be facing a net population shortfall were it not for the fact that we have sizable immigration coming into this country, and the immigrants who tend to come in tend to have larger families than those who are not immediate immigrants. Last week on this program, I mentioned a statistic. It just came out of the blue. The Census Bureau is indicating that when you look at American children, right now, if you look at children age 5 and younger, fully 25% are Hispanic, Latino. That's fascinating. It says something about the commitment to family of that Hispanic culture. And that's something I just want to make very clear. I admire. It says something about their commitment to the future. It says something about their optimism and hope about the next generation. It says something also about the fact that so many other Americans simply aren't having children. You have an antinatalist philosophy. That's a big, sophisticated title to put on a mentality that says children are a hobby or a project. You know, the Washington Post ran another article. I think it's very interesting, the fact that you have both of these articles appearing in one paper just a few weeks apart. Just a few weeks ago, an op-ed piece was published in the Washington Post by a Washingtonian who said that he and his wife felt guilty when they had their third child, because so many people in Washington felt that that third child was just, well, one too many. You're kind of breaking an unspoken rule. You know what? If people don't start breaking that rule, then we're going to be in big trouble as a civilization. When you start looking at the fact that we have population growth, let's be thankful that we do. And put that into your equation when you think about the whole immigration problem. The immigration challenge reminds us that if we did not have immigration, and if those immigrant families were not having more children, we too would be in a population shortfall. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. What is your Christian analysis of this problem, and what would be the answer? The phone number, 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Here's the question. Why would people decide not to have children when there is such an apparent glaring need of the society for more young people? Or let's put the question a different way. As Christians, should we be concerned to have children and to encourage the having of children because it's a societal good? Let's just remember that according to the biblical worldview, the gift of children is always a good gift. And my wife and I, you know, are constantly reminded of that because we, for so long, prayed for children. And out there listening to this program are so many who struggled with infertility and have prayed for children and not had children. The Lord, I'm very, very thankful to say, gave us two. But you start looking at the fact that across the country and around the world, Japan as a microcosm, people are having fewer children, and for some reason, should we take into consideration the fact that society needs more children? Should we assume then, tracking this consequence back to its originating idea, that the hostility towards pregnancy and large families and multiple children has something to do with losing something of God's intention from the beginning? People were warning for years about a population explosion. It turned out that the biggest problem, at least for some societies, is going to be a population implosion. I wonder how we're supposed to think about that. Ideas do have consequences. The consequences can often be tracked and traced back to the idea. And I'm going to suggest that a part of what has been going on here is the fact that children have been reduced to economic units. And so you start looking at the fact that a child is now a certain expense. There's a certain investment in the child. And just like any kind of business decision, it's a question of reward and investment. Is this going to be worthwhile? And evidently, a lot of people are saying, no, it's really not. I think there are also lifestyle expectations that come into play here. I think a lot of us tend to think, look, if I have another child, I'm going to have to adjust my lifestyle. We're going to have to face perhaps even a culture that says you shouldn't have more than two children. What are you doing? Well, I'm glad to tell you that there are an incredible number of counter-revolutionaries out there. And I hope there are some in Japan. I can tell you there's some here. I get to see quite a few of them on a daily basis. I'm surrounded by them, and I'm thankful for them. And there are revolutionaries out there who are saying, look, we believe that having children is itself a good. And not just good and not bad, but good in the sense that God's glory is actually in receiving the gift of children and in celebrating that. And so around me, I'm glad to say I have so many couples who are having multiple children. And I look and I'm envious of their experience. I glory in what I see as their reception of these good gifts, and I rejoice in their children. And I'm not primarily thinking of them as the future workers of America, but they are. I'm not first and foremost looking at these children, especially when they're first born, as the future leaders of the church, but they are. And it's just a reminder to us that if you take a hostile view towards pregnancy and reproduction and babies and children, you will eventually end up with a society of aged people with no one coming behind. Or the number so small, as in Japan, that it will lead to a cessation of economic activity. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from some of you out there who are concerned about this. I'd love to hear from someone out there who's one of these counter-revolutionaries to say, look, we're going to do it differently. And I'd really like to hear if any of you have any thoughts about what kind of mentality would produce this kind of population catastrophe. A couple of things to think about here. You know, in terms of America, we are tied so much to the idea of autonomous individualism that that we don't think we really owe the society much at all. But when it comes to the implosion of the population in Japan, it becomes pretty clear that when we think we don't owe the society anything at all, including children, pretty soon you end up with the disaster that is now looming right in the face of the nation of Japan. I go back to the fact, and we've talked about this already, that in times past, war, famine, plague, those were the things that primarily caused this kind of population downturn. And it took a long time, centuries sometimes, for cultures and civilizations to dig themselves out of that population crisis. Well, we're doing it to ourselves, but we do have the power now, the capacity now, to at least say we're learning from our own demography here. We're learning from our own population statistics, something that we should have known all along. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about this incredible downturn in the population of Japan. Over 30 years of lowered birth rates, now reaching a point of crisis, looking just a few years out at social catastrophe in a nation where by mid-century, 7 out of 10 workers simply won't be replaced. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. The biblical worldview privileges children in such a way that children are understood, well, to be the picture, for instance, of how we come to faith in Christ. Through the simplicity of a child, children are presented as signs of hope for the future. You have in the Bible so many people who are praying for children. You have in the Bible longing for children and celebration of children, responsibility to children. It takes a lot of distance from the biblical worldview to get to a position that's hostile to children. We're asking the question how this could have happened in Japan, looking at an economic and social catastrophe with falling birth rates, 7 out of 10 workers not even replaced by the mid-century. You're looking at something that will happen elsewhere as well. We're asking the question why. And talking about how we as Christians should think about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255 from Newport News, Virginia. Nancy's listening on XM170. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hey, Dr. Moeller. I wanted to comment that about 20 years ago, I hung out with about 11 or 12 people. We got together every weekend and partied. We all used to laugh and joke. None of us wanted children because they're expensive and inconvenient. Since then, I don't associate with these people anymore. I've become a born-again Christian like 7 or 8 years ago. But those same people still hang out, and none of them still have children for the same reason. We're all in our 40s now, and none of them wanted children because they can't party. Who's going to watch the kids? They can't go out, you know, sea bass fishing. And, you know, they're inconvenient and expensive, and it's sad. It's really sad. I don't have children and tried to have children, but it just didn't happen, you know. But they don't want children, and I think that's a reflection of society today. They're expensive and inconvenient.
And they certainly can be. They can be expensive and inconvenient, no doubt about it, and what blessings they are. And I just think about your particular word there, Nancy, because I can tell you years ago I remembered reading some of the feminist literature where there were some women who referred to other women as breeders, very condescendingly. Although those are women who are, they're the breeders. The rest of us will do the important work. And I just see that as so hostile to the worldview of the Bible and so hostile to human happiness, both individually, because I think of what they're missing, and then socially, when I think about what's happening in a society in which children are simply not honored and sought after, and for that matter, conceived and born. Thanks for your call, Nancy. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Maitland, Florida. Jeff's on the line. What do you think, Jeff?
Hi. Actually, I have an interesting point here. I'd like to make this a little bit more subjective for you.
All right.
See, it's from what I understand that I would like to see that, you know, the worker statistics that you mentioned for, you know, are very, very alarming. However, the thing is that I'm seeing is the workers now here in America are being replaced by the Chinese. So do we even need that work to be replaced? And not only that, I would also like to ask you a question about the living, life quality of children that are raised in less fortunate situations. And we as Christians, should we acknowledge our financial strength and maybe make a better life for our children, maybe by having less and being able to give them all the world of us, or just toss it to the side and say that we need to create more?
You know, that's a very interesting series of questions, Jeff, and I appreciate your phone call. And by the way, you know, are they necessary as workers? Let me tell you that I'm not an economist, so I'm not certain that I can give you the absolute answer on all the social costs of outsourcing and all the rest. I can tell you that when I look at this news story that I have right here in my hand from the Washington Post, it says, no kidding, that the Japanese are developing robots to help with care for the elderly. That's in the Washington Post. Sounds to me like it's some kind of science fiction magazine. But it is actually in the Washington Post. It says, and I read it here, the government is subsidizing the development of robots as caregivers for the old. You know, when it comes right down to it, you can outsource all kinds of things. You can outsource, you know, if you need work on your computer, you need someone to help you on the phone, you're talking to someone by and large who's outsourced. But when you have someone that you need to care for you in the hospital, you really can't outsource that. So I think at least the answer is we need a lot more people, and Japan's going to need many more people than are going to be replaced in terms of their current birth rates. In terms of the economic expectations, Jeff, let me just tell you that I think when honesty is very important here. And so I'm in a position in which I would not dare tell people I know exactly how many children you should have based upon your economic situation. Nor would I say that economics would be completely irrelevant to this. Because we do understand, we do have a responsibility to care for our children. I simply want to raise the question, and frankly, by the fact I'm raising it, you know how I would answer it. I think if we are privileging certain lifestyle expectations in terms of economics over children, we're making a huge mistake. And I say that recognizing that all of us take these issues into consideration, but when you really think about children, you think about the fact that most of the people who are, say, of the greatest generation of World War II, they lived through the Great Depression and managed to come out living lives that contributed hugely to society. I think of my own parents. They were children in the aftermath of the Great Depression, children during World War II. They certainly didn't have a lot of the things that we think everybody should have today, and they actually would look back and say they had very happy childhoods. And so I think we're really raising the materialistic expectations and the economic expectations way too high. And when I say we, I think that gets into all of our thinking. And I'm sure that there are times when people look at someone, a couple having children, and say, you know, they really can't afford that child. Well, we ought to be very, very careful to ask if that's really, really true. Let's go very quickly to Eileen calling from Jacksonville, Florida. Go ahead, Eileen.
Hi, Jay. I just wanted to point out that I think there's a lot of stresses. I'm a mother of five. There's a lot of stresses on parents to not only be perfect, but that you don't have an extended family. Most couples have no support system. And you're expected to be absolutely perfect, and the center of your life is your child. So if you have more than one or two children, you are unable to meet the needs of what society has deemed to be met.
You know, Eileen, let me just give you a word of encouragement here. Number one, you've got more credibility than anyone who's talked to this subject today, calling in as a mother of five. God bless you. The second thing I want to say is, let me just tell you, as president of an institution and as a leader, I discovered something a long time ago, and that is if you want something done, ask a busy person to do it. Because a busy person shows that he or she actually knows how to get things done and will do it. My guess is that you as a busy mom are able to do a whole lot more with five, because in each one of those lives, you're pouring yourself than a lot of other parents who would argue otherwise are actually doing with their one or two. God bless you for your call, Eileen. It was great to hear from you. And boy, again, that's the most credible caller we could have in this program thus far today. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. As always, I appreciate the callers. Three interesting points made in the course of this discussion, and it ought to lead to a far larger conversation. You know, I hope this kind of issue raises a question for couples thinking about this, and not only for couples, but also for people who would be in the local church. It's a good topic for young couples to talk about. When you start thinking about all this and you start realizing that when you're looking at Japan, you're looking at a microcosm of an issue that's global in significance. We're looking at some of the most massive social, demographic, and cultural shifts ever experienced by human beings And unlike in previous times where this kind of cultural change might take place here and there, it's taking place now all at once. We are a part of a global civilization in terms of these seismic demographic and cultural and social and economic changes. The other thing is that in times past, you thought, well, all right, we're going to go through a period or a phase of this kind of dislocation, and then things will return to some kind of normal. You go through a war, you go through a time of plague or pestilence, you go through something like the Great Depression, and you say, all right, now there's a reset, we're on the other side. The reality is that the seismic, huge, just simply massive nature of the change we're experiencing now and the changes means that these things are not going to be over anytime soon in order to return to some kind of new normal. We're looking at Christians in this generation being called to think as Christians and live as Christians in the midst of ongoing, well, you can almost come up with a phrase that in itself doesn't make much sense, permanent change. That's really what we're looking at. One of the things that we as Christians must do in order to be faithful disciples is to think in terms of the consequences of ideas. And as we've already said on this program, that means sometimes looking at the consequence and reasoning back to the idea that produced it. But it also means looking at our own worldview and saying, what difference should this make looking to the future? What should be the consequences of this? And that's where Christians, living faithfully as Christians, honoring marriage as marriage, receiving children as gifts, not because we think, first of all, of the pragmatic consequences of it, but because we know it's simply right. Well, the consequences of that kind of idea being lived out in action and faithfulness is going to be that Christians are going to make a very significant contribution through their witness, through their marriages, through their families, and through their children. You know, just in the process of this day, I've had the opportunity to see a lot of children being brought by proud parents to a formal reception, and I always get joy out of seeing these children. I see joy out of seeing these children with their parents. And to be honest, I look at these children and realize there really is in those children the face of the future. That's where it's to be found. Where there are no children, that ought to tell us something. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.